League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutfer.
Hello, let's get going.
This week we're talking about hurty heads.
Headaches, stress headache, migraines.
Migraines, ding ding ding, you are correct. But first we need to thank all of our patrons. Thank you to our patrons for voting in this topic. If you want to vote in a topic in our Patreon vote, all you need to do is head to our Patreon and vote. You can also submit topics, you can get bonus episodes, you could get this other show that we do called After Dark. You could get some cool stuff like pin badges if you stick around for long enough. Hey, there's lots of cool stuff on our Patreon. Go ahead and check it out. But why don't we start off this episode, as we always do, with a little question. So if you're listening on Apple or Spotify or anywhere else, head to the YouTube comments, get down there, answer this question. Do you get migraines, Luke?
I do not. I don't even know what it means.
You don't know what it means?
I know other people complain about migraines, but I've never had a migraine.
You never had a migraine? I've never had a migraine either. I've pretended to have migraines to get out of work. Hold on.
Yeah.
That's because they don't take mental illness seriously, so I just had to pretend that I got migraines because it's something that they can neither prove nor disprove, and so if I was feeling particularly mentally ill, I would just say I had a migraine and I had to leave.
Yeah, you have my backing on that.
Yeah, right? I mean, like, look, if you're not going to respect one thing, I'm going to pretend to have something else that you can't see. That's all I'm saying. So, I mean, I guess the question, what are migraines, is not going to be one that you're going to answer.
Well, sore head, general tiredness feeling, probably? Something like that.
So a migraine is usually a moderate or severe headache. And I'm just going to read this verbatim. A moderate or severe headache felt as a throbbing pain on one side of the head. So there's these sort of chronic headaches that are sort of accompanied by other symptoms. So there's more than just a headache component to a migraine. It usually starts, it says, in early to midlife. And obviously, if you think about it, having headaches quite intermittently or quite randomly throughout your life, but still fairly regularly, is going to potentially impact your quality of life. It's going to be a bit of a pain to deal with at the very least. But it is underdiagnosed and undertreated. Kind of all know about to some extent, right? Like, if someone says, oh, you're giving me a migraine,
What? You can give people a migraine?
Like, you know, people talk about them say that to mean bad headache. In the same way that I guess people say, oh, I'm so OCD because I like things to be neat and tidy.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm so autistic because I didn't understand that joke.
I missed that one social cue.
Yeah, there we go. You get what I mean, though. Migraines, they're sort of in the common tongue. Mm. I don't know. People use the word a lot is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, we don't know that much about them. Us. I'm saying.
I know nothing.
Yeah, no, I knew nothing before I went into sort of looking into this episode. But yeah, so there's more symptoms that come along with migraines. We'll get into them in more depth in a bit. But, you know, things like feeling sick, being sick, sensitivity to light or sound. The light and sound sensitivity is probably something that most people are somewhat aware of. And it is pretty common. 1 in every 5 women and around 1 in every 15 men experience migraines. And as I said, usually in sort of early to midlife. So kind of when you're an adult, early adulthood, that kind of area. That kind of era, that kind of age range, right? And they're like, as I said, that you can have chronic migraines. So you have them, like you have them somewhat regularly, but you can also have a situation wherein you have migraine, you have a migraine, and you don't have one for another few years, and then you get another, right? So it's not something that's necessarily going to be plaguing you every week, every day. They could come at any time, you know. They could take a huge break and then come on back. And chronic migraine is characterized by the experience of a migraine or a migraineous headache, it says here, which is quite a fun word to say.
Just add us on the end of a noun.
Yeah, a migraineous headache on at least 15 days per month. And that is genuinely disabling. I mean, because, again, I want to be clear, we'll get into this in a bit, but migraines are more than just a bit of a headache, right? They can be absolutely debilitating, and 15 days for a month is, at the very least, half a month. No, yeah. Just under half a month.
More than half a month if you're in February.
Yeah, exactly. At most, it's more than half a month. At least, it's just under half. Mm. The median range, or the middle range, it is half a month. Them some numbers for you before someone gets in the comments. Yeah, I know that's not the median. I'm sorry, okay? I just started talking. Anyway, migraines are also a spectrum condition, or migraine is a spectrum condition. You know, people talk about having migraines as sort of a migraine being the individual episode, but also migraine itself refers to, I guess, the sort of, let's call it the disorder, right? The sort of problem that people experience. So, like, you could talk about migraine in the singular when you mean migraines in general. Does that make sense?
Somewhat.
So I could say migraine is a spectrum condition, right? So the condition would be called migraine.
Singular.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Like cancer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. It's weird, right?
Yeah.
It's weird.
I always think of migraine as being something you have.
Yeah.
You have a migraine. It's like, it's a noun, but like a possessive noun.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, you just migraine as an illness sort of thing.
Yeah, so weird. This is migraine, but then you can have migraines is kind of how people talk about it. I'm just kind of making that clear because I'm going to be switching back and forth on what I'm saying.
That's going to be disconcerting.
It'll be fine. You'll figure out what I'm saying. Context is key.
It's like sheep. Sorry. Yeah. It's like a singular, but it's like singular. The plural is migraine.
Yeah.
Oh, God, sorry. Well, I'm wrapping my head. You're giving me a migraine, Corey.
It can also be like, oh, Luke, let's not make light of this.
Sorry.
It could also be like fish, because I think the plural of fish is fish, unless you're talking about different types of fish, in which case it's fishes. But if you're as educated as we are, you know that there's no such thing as a fish.
Yes.
I really drew that one out.
I can't remember why, but that is, apparently.
Because genetically, there's... Grouping fish together is essentially just grouping everything that lives in the water that isn't, you know, like a mammal or a reptile or a bird or whatever together. They're not necessarily all that closely related to each other.
Right.
They could have closer relatives that wouldn't necessarily be classed as fish.
So it's like you're going through your DSM-5 and you're like, is it a mammal? No. Is it a reptile? No. Is it a bird? No. If not, it's a fish.
Yeah.
It's your final diagnosis if it's not any of the above.
I want to make clear that you're using this as a metaphor. Luke does not think that the DSM-5 is used to...
No, I thoroughly think that fish is in the DSM-5. And its diagnostic criteria is, have you excluded if it's a mammal, a bird, or a reptile? That's something I'm asserting as a fact.
I'm going to move on. So migraine, as I said, is a spectrum condition. And what that means is that some people can have, you know, not too bad and not too frequently. And other people can have it real bad and real frequently. And there's any sort of combination in between there, right? Essentially, that's not necessarily to mean that it's within one person a spectrum, which, you know, hey, it could be. It could change over time. But what that means is that among, you know, everyone that, you know, gets migraines, it's not necessarily one consistent way of experiencing them.
It also sounds like it's like a multi-dimensional spectrum, which is really fun. Like, because you have frequency on one axis and then you have intensity on another axis.
Yeah.
Double spectrum.
Yeah, so you can have infrequent but very intense, or, you know, very frequent but very mild.
Like the Kinsey scale.
No, the Kinsey scale doesn't do that.
I've seen a Kinsey scale with two axes.
I only know the one axis.
Ah.
Yeah.
What's this? Okay.
Okay. Well, this is irrelevant anyway. Yeah. So yeah, let's talk about the prevalence. How common do you think migraines are?
In what sense? Like in any on any day, how many people are having migraines? How many people in the population get migraines? What do you mean?
Give me whatever you want.
Okay. On any one day, I think 322 million people have a migraine. I think that one in 50 people have consistent, frequent migraines.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I did mention earlier, one in every 5 women and around one in every 15 men.
God, I wish I paid attention. Sorry, yeah. Yes, you did do that. I did do that just recently.
But let's talk about headaches very briefly for a second. So headaches, which is one of the main symptoms of migraine, that accounts for 4.4% of all consultations in general practice. I'm just reading this verbatim. Approximately 5% of all medical admissions to hospital and approximately 20% of neurology outpatient consultations. That's just headache, by the way. That's not necessarily headache tied to migraine. That's just showing you how...
1 in 20.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've also got here that apparently migraine affects over 20% of people at some point throughout their lives. And 4.5% of the population of Western Europe has headaches on at least 15 days per month, supposedly. Which is quite a lot, right? That seems like a lot more than you'd expect.
It's like a pandemic.
Well, I wouldn't quite say a pandemic.
In this case, it's more epidemic.
If we look at global studies, they would sort of point to 1% of the world's population having chronic migraine, which is, you know, an attack at least 15 days out of every month. Yeah. Yeah, so that's 1% of people around the world. So chronic migraine, it says here, there's a substantial economic burden on society. It's so common that even though for many people it's no more than an inconvenience, the cumulative burden of the disorder caused it to rank in the top 40 conditions causing worldwide disability, according to the World Health Organization's 2012 Global Burden of Disease figures. Weird that the World Health Organization has, you know, like a global top 40. Kind
of UK next top 40.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like I can imagine them sitting on the radio and like listing it all the same
hits.
Way. Coming out for the Christmas number one this year in 2021. It is COVID-19 for another win. Like it seriously. God, I can't believe there's a clip of me saying that online now. But yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense that the World Health Organization would say, here are the top 40 disabling conditions. However, wouldn't call it a top 40.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting because this is something I was thinking about a lot during that big world event that happened.
Oh, you mean the World Cup?
Anyway, during that big world event that happened, the pandemic, I thought about, you know, we got into all these good habits of wearing masks when we had a cold and like social distancing if we were unwell or staying home. It got me thinking about, like, I was at the time doing an economics degree. And so it got me thinking massively about, like, how large the economic impact must be every day on even just things like having a cough, like the amount of people who have coughs and then they don't have a good like system in their workplace whereby they're allowed to work from home, especially pre-pandemic.
Yeah, if they're able. Yeah,
if they're able to at all. Yeah, I mean, many people can't. They work in a restaurant, for example, going to work from home there. But like the drag on the economy must be insane if you looked at it on a macro scale of like if we just implemented basic stuff like, for example, they do in China where wearing face masks if you have a cold is more common than it is even now. Even now that we normalized it for 2 or 3 years, it's now not normal again.
We're a resilient bunch. Yeah. We're very stubborn, aren't we?
But seriously, if you're looking at stuff that's like trying to like create economic growth and stuff like that, even simple behavioural things like that, I feel like they must have massive measurable effects. And having a headache, your economic output on any one day, if you've got something like a headache going on all day, I reckon that's measurable on a massive, on obviously not measurable by like literally, but it's sizable.
The difference, yeah, is...
Yeah, I just like, find that... And we don't have things like... We are pretty lucky in our country, for example, to have pretty cheap access to pain medication, which the United States... I don't know if you've ever tried to buy ibuprofen in the United States, but it's like 30, 40 times more expensive than it
really?
Is here.
I thought like paracetamol was cheaper.
Paracetamol is fine.
Okay.
Ibuprofen is not called ibuprofen in the US. It's called something else.
And Tylenol, is it not?
Yeah, it's easily $15, $16 a packet. Whereas over here, you go into Tesco, it's about 30p.
Oh, yeah, no. Ibuprofen is super cheap.
So that is a good thing for the economy. Like having easy access to pain medication, if you have a normal headache and it's not debilitating in any other way, that's great. That would be great that's good for a system level. And that's a good example of why policy that seems like, oh, why are we giving everyone this thing for cheap? They should buy it. They should work for it. And actually, it's good for everyone in the long term.
No, I think you're on something really interesting there, because it kind of gets me thinking about how compassion could improve society somewhat. Mm. Don't you think? Like, I mean, in sort of economics, yes, you know, we think of it as being, you know, cutthroat, ruthless. It's all about increasing profits. It's not about making people more comfortable. It's about increasing productivity. And you don't increase productivity by making people more comfortable necessarily. Okay, as you've said many times, in studying economics, one of the first things that you learned was that a lot of it is just whatever, made up stuff that like we pretend makes sense when actually it's kind of been proven to not make that much sense.
Well,
right?
It's more that they teach you all the sort of economic theories that you will hear sort of used by politicians all the time. And then they very quickly teach you that those are like, but in practice, that's like nonsense.
Yeah.
But then you'll hear it on BBC News, like being spouted by some politician.
Yeah. Well, see, that's interesting to me because there's this person on TikTok, Madeline Pendleton, who is honestly, I think, fantastic. She runs a business. It's a shop where she sells clothes, and it is the most ethical business I have ever seen in my life. And look, you know, we run SciGuys together, and I try very hard to make sure that we're treating people fairly when we sort of work with them, when we get a sort of freelancer or someone involved. We try and be as fair as possible. Now, the way that she runs her business is honestly the most compassionate way, and it seems like such a great business to work for, and it seems like such a sort of, successful business, in that everyone there earns the same wage, they have unlimited paid time off, they can take sick days for when they need, and the business doesn't try to run for a profit. By which I mean they reinvest the money back into the business so that the people working there have healthcare. Recently, they bought everyone working there new cars so that they had a car to get to and from work. They've got gym memberships, and you know, they make all these decisions together. It's not just one person sat at the top saying, this is how it's going to work for you. And what I'm kind of saying there is that if you look at the sort of unlimited pay time off or unlimited sort of sick leave that they do at that business, that essentially works out such that, you know, people that are working there aren't forcing themselves to work through illness and therefore decreasing their own productivity. They're giving themselves the time to rest so that when they do come back, they're able to work properly. I mean, I saw a video from her recently where she mentioned, you know, when people come into the business and they're used to, you know, normal working practices where they need to work through illness or they're not necessarily feeling great, I can't take time off, I need to get this work done, that actually they end up making the productivity of the business suffer by trying to push themselves through that, because everyone else then has to pick up the slack of them being emotionally a little bit off whilst at work. And that's kind of a position that everyone is forced into normally, right? Like if you are working for a company, like a normal company, you will probably be expected to come in when you're ill. Like, I mean, I worked in the service industry for a good bit. I worked in pubs. I worked in a restaurant as a waiter. I was ill. I think I was vomiting. I had diarrhea. And I was like, I'm really ill, I can't come in. They were like, come in. We need you. You got to come in anyway. Which is insane, right? Like, I was working with food and I had an illness that in your training, you're specifically told to not come in for at least 24 hours or so if you have that symptom, right? Like, and yet you're forced to come in. So like, I feel like you're pretty, like, you're 100% right in the sort of idea that you're bringing up there of, hey, maybe focusing on accommodations when people are sick, when people, like, you know, can't work to their full productivity, might actually increase productivity counterintuitively, even though people are technically maybe working less than they might have been beforehand.
By the way, if anybody is ever in that position that Kari's just describing, where you work in, especially in like a food sector, and you're told to come in, get that exchange in writing.
Everything in writing.
Don't go in. If they do anything, you've got a fantastic employment lawsuit on your hands.
Oh, yeah.
Because they can't possibly.
There's no way out. There's no way out.
Like, wow.
And as well, if you're worried, oh, what if I get fired? I can't get another job. One, you do not need to put them down as your reference. Two, if you do have to put them down as your reference, and they get called up, just have that exchange printed out and be like,
delicious.
Hey, this is what happened here.
Mm.
Like, it's so good.
Nothing more tasty than a certain lawsuit.
Oh my God. Yeah. Honestly, literally, if you're working somewhere like that, if you're working in the service industry or you're working in retail, or honestly, if you're working literally anywhere, everything in writing. Do not have a phone conversation ever. Make sure that everything is in writing. And if you do have a phone conversation, follow up with an email, just kind of summarizing the phone conversation and say, hey, this is the conversation we had on the phone. Can you just confirm that these points, just so I'm on the right track? And if they'll have to come back and they'll have to come back and say yes.
By the way, just quickly, last one on that as well. If you can't do that, if you can't get it in writing, there is a weird law in the UK, which I found out about recently, which is that you're allowed to record a phone call with the consent of one of the participants in the phone call,
which is you.
That person can be you.
Yeah, it's like a one party consent, which makes sense. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I have recorded some phone calls. I know, deleting the recordings, but I've recorded phone calls with when I've been calling up, you know, sort of my cast company and stuff, because they're recording me, and also they're often lying about what they're saying on the phone. You know, when you're calling up, you know, phone companies, gas companies. Basically anyone that's going to try and swindle you or waste enough of your time that you give up and leave them alone, make sure you just record those conversations to refer back to later. Like, it is absolutely, absolutely imperative that you have actual documentation in some way of what was said, because otherwise it's he said, she said, or, you know, they said, or whatever pronoun said, anything, and you're never going to win that. People that you're working with, you know, especially people that are like your bosses and stuff, are probably going to try to exploit you. So go ahead of that, to be honest. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
Hark, the ad bell, he does sing.
He sings for Patreon, I think. If you head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys, you can get a whole host of cool things. What can they get, Luke?
Oh, blimmin' heck. They can get so many things. There's bonus episodes. You can request topics for episodes. There's an entire other show called After Dark where we discuss sort of philosophical things and just general discussion, the kind of stuff that you imagine we talk about after we've finished recording. Well, that is when we do it, so that is what we do. And lots of other stuff. What else is there?
You get your name at the end of every single SciGuys episode. You can also vote on topics. You get to choose what we do. And at the end of the episode that's voted on by our patrons, if it's your first month being a patron, you get thanked by name. By us, the SciGuys. Isn't that fun?
That is really fun. I'll use my vocal cords to say your name with a 50% probability, because Corey says half of them.
That's very true. So head to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling Yuzu Mango IQ Mix Hydration Mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Well, look, we've spoken about the prevalence a little bit. We've spoken a little bit about chronic migraines and how that's actually a disabling condition, which isn't something that you would necessarily think about immediately. Just with the way that people talk about migraines generally, they're kind of spoken about as being less serious than they actually are. Obviously, you could have mild migraines, and that might be what people are talking about, but migraines can be disabling, and so I think it's one of those things where we should be a little bit more careful about how we use the term migraine, unless, of course, you're working somewhere that will not let you take time off for severe mental health issues, and so you need to lie about them, lie about having a migraine instead. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, but yeah, no, it says here that you know, as I said, the World Health Organization put migraines in one of their in their top 40 conditions causing worldwide disability. And just another other like, you know, and just some more information on that. It was above all other neurological disorders outside of stroke, meningitis and epilepsy, which like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So the top four neurological disorders, it feels very weird to say, but the top four disabling neurological disorders worldwide: stroke, meningitis, epilepsy and migraine. Mm. Right. Like, I don't think we think of that.
No.
You think of migraine as being even in the same sort of tier or realm as strokes, epilepsy or, you know, meningitis.
Or even if we do, we would expect it to be such a tiny minority of people that it wouldn't be in that top four.
No, exactly.
Like, top four.
And in the United Kingdom, it says here, it is third behind stroke and dementia.
I was going to say, it's higher than dementia, which is one we know is incredibly debilitating.
Yeah, so in the UK, it is behind dementia. But yeah, like if we're talking about World Health Organization top 40, it would be ahead of.
Right.
So it depends. Yeah. Depending on who you're asking, it's got it's placed differently. But yeah, apparently, this is something I'm just reading here. It says, it causes the loss of 230,000 DALYs, dailies, disability adjusted life years annually, which is mad. I mean, I'd assume that's the loss of 230,000 like years of life. I guess that's what that's trying to say. Mm. But why don't we talk really, really briefly? We've kind of covered what migraines are, how prevalent they are. Why don't we talk really briefly about the difference between migraine and headaches? What do you think the difference there is? I've touched on it already. Let's see if you're listening.
Well, yes, this time I was listening, in that you said that a migraine is on one side of the head.
Okay, that is not the thing I wanted you to listen to, but
okay,
yeah.
And it also has other symptoms that come with it. So a headache wouldn't be, like, you wouldn't say, I've got a headache, and one of the symptoms of headache is vomiting.
Yeah.
But you would say, apparently, according to your research here that I was listening to earlier, you would say, I've got a migraine, and a migraine includes a headache and also vomiting, for example.
Exactly, yeah. So I'll put it this way as well. I'm pretty sure that you can have sort of a migraine on both sides. I don't know why it just said one side. I think it's usually one side, but it can be both. Double check that yourself, because I'm getting different information from different places. But the main thing I want to point out, is that headache is a symptom. And migraine is
a condition.
Yeah, it's a condition, which is made up of a number of systems, like a cluster of symptoms, right? So headache is literally just, it's what it says on the tin. Achy head.
Yeah.
Got a sore head. And so, yeah, that would be the difference there. So a migraine is, by definition, more than just a headache.
Okay, so when you were saying earlier, for example, the colloquial use of terms like, you're giving me a migraine.
Mm.
I've also heard people say, oh, I've got a migraine. And they just have a headache.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't be a migraine then?
No, it wouldn't.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
right?
It's a bad headache. People have bad headaches, and that is debilitating too. But they will say that, but they've not got necessarily the other symptoms.
Absolutely not necessarily. Yeah, so I mean, we can get into the different types of migraine really briefly as well. We'll go into then what happens during migraines, and then we'll talk about more of the sort of symptoms there. So how many different types of migraine do you think I'm going to tell you about today?
Five.
No. So I'm going to tell you about three. But there are a few types. So these aren't necessarily all of them. So migraine with aura, and I'm just going to read this out verbatim. It says, where there are specific warning signs just before the migraine begins, such as seeing flashing lights. Ooh. Migraine without aura, which is the most common type, where the migraine happens without any specific warning signs. And then migraine aura without headache, which is also called, it says here, the silent migraine.
Sorry,
where,
what?
I know, right?
You can have a migraine without a headache?
Well, I've evidently so, Luke. So that's where an aura or other migraine symptoms are experienced, but a headache doesn't develop. Which is interesting, because headache is clearly like one of the, is like the key thing
it's
with migraines.
Headline.
But like this is kind of what happens when you build out a condition, right? So like, there's migraines, you know, where it's like, oh, the headache. And then also we've like, oh, well, sometimes there could be aura. There could be like this sort of this lead up to a migraine. We're like, oh, the migraine's going to come. I can see these flashing lights. I've got this other stuff going on. And then in other cases, you could have just that sort of precursor without then the following headache.
So it sounds like that third one will be mostly people who already have migraines and they know what to spot. And they're like, oh, it's coming on. I can feel it coming. And then the headache doesn't come in that instance.
Yeah, but I mean, like it could literally be someone that only has that kind of. I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Luke.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that is genuinely it is, there's a lot of information on this, but also there's a lot of like quite in-depth, like really nitty gritty brain stuff. It's definitely an interesting thing. I think we do need to study it more. I mean, we've probably done quite a bit of studies on it, but it's one of those things where like we'd always be better served by studying more about it. But let's get into what happens during migraines. So when you're sort of going through a migraine, these sort of the chemicals in your brain essentially cause, it says here, a wave of electrical depolarization at cell surfaces, also known as cortical spreading depression. So the effects of that can be different from person to person, different from attack to attack, different over time. It's not consistent, sort of, you know, the results that you will see from that neurochemical disturbance, right? And aura, what I was mentioning earlier, it says here, aura are neurological disturbances during the hour before the headache hits and affect about a third of sufferers. Aura are often visual with zigzag lines, flashing lights, blurred vision, or blind spots, which is like, this is a genuine neurological condition, right? It's not just headaches. It's quite a bit more than that. We know kind of what's going on in the brain there. And, you know, like it is genuinely something happening in your head to cause like sort of these, I guess, visuals and then the following headaches.
Zigzag lines.
Yeah.
Because zigzag, that's fascinating, because zigzag lines, you would imagine, were like a human invention.
It feels like that, like, doesn't it?
But if they, maybe we saw zigzag lines and then we drew them and we're like, oh, that's what I was seeing. That's really weird.
I love
weird.
The way your brain works.
Right? That's just really weird.
But yeah, in the next phase, you then start to get headache, brain fog, fatigue, you know, the sort of symptoms that you more associate with migraines. It also says that cognitive problems are common. And, you know, do you know what the vagus nerve is?
Oh, God. No, I can't remember.
The vagus nerve is the one that runs from your brain into your GI tract, into your gut.
Okay, right.
And so what it does there is it just kind of slows down the stomach sort of processing and emptying. And then obviously that can make you then feel nauseous and it can cause you to vomit because the stomach isn't emptying as quickly as it normally would. So it's got to come out somewhere. It could come up. And then that also means if the stomach isn't emptying as quickly as it normally would, if you were to say take medication or, you know, try and eat something, it's not going to be absorbed as well because it's sitting in your stomach for longer than it normally would be, right? And it says here that the pain that's experienced during migraines can be felt anywhere on the head, neck, or shoulders. And also apparently in kids, it's not uncommon to have pain in the abdomen as well. And so that's kind of like the sort of, that's what happens during migraines. As I said, there's sort of different stages. So we'll go a little bit more in depth to that with the distinct stages. So not everyone goes through all of these stages, but I'm just going to go through them all here. So there's the prodromal or pre-headache stage where you get changes in mood, energy levels, behavior, and appetite that can happen for a few hours or days before an attack. Right. So I want to be clear, like I didn't fully appreciate what migraines were until like, you know, researching for this episode. I was just like, oh, it's just a real bad headache. Right. But no, it's a neurological condition that can affect you for days before and after an attack. It's not just a headache in one moment, you know,
and a very specific like reason why it's happening. You're talking about this depolarization.
Yeah, exactly. And then so moving on from that, from the prodromal, the pre-headache stage, which can last for a few days before, you've got aura, which we've already spoken about, which is usually the sort of visual stuff, the zigzags that you were so enthralled with. Yes. Flashes of light, blind spots, which we've already mentioned, that can last for 5 minutes to an hour, which again, having a 5 minute warning is, I mean, it could be good, but also that could be like kind of like, oh God, here we go. It could also be up to an hour. Do you know what I mean? Like the uncertainty there as well. I mean, you think of sort of something being disabling as it being just sort of quite literally disabling, like, oh, here is pain. Oh, here is you being unable to move because of these mechanical reasons. But then also you got to think about the sort of mental state that you're going to be in when you're kind of living on edge, where you're like, I don't know when this is going to come, or I don't know how bad this is going to be, or I don't know how long these symptoms are going to last for afterwards. I mean, for me personally, I mean, I've spoken about this on the podcast before. I had a case of epididymitis. I had an inflamed tube that was attached to my testicle, basically, right? We don't know why. Literally, no doctor could do anything about it. No one had any idea. I had many, many people cut my testicles, and it was all for naught. But
cup, not cut.
Cup, not cut. Cup.
Cup.
C-U-P. Cup. yeah. cupped my testicles, did an ultrasound, they pushed down all my bladder, it was uncomfortable, I got made fun of for not drinking enough when I definitely did drink enough. Anyway, I went through a lot of stuff, right? And the ball pain itself, it sucked. But what was worse was just not knowing what was going on and also not knowing when it would happen, because there was no consistent sort of pattern. And that in itself, that uncertainty was just horrible. Mm. It was not fun. So we've spoken about sort of the aura, the prodromal stage. There's also the headache stage, which is fairly self-explanatory. You get a headache. We've already kind of spoken about this. It's usually, it says here, a pulsating or throbbing pain on one side of the head. We've spoken about the nausea, the vomiting that can come along with that. And we've also spoken about the sensitivity to light and sounds. And that sensitivity can last for anywhere between 4 to 72 hours.
Oh, no.
Yeah, not good.
It's not a good time.
Exactly. And then resolution stage, that's the final stage there. And that's where all of those other symptoms start to, you know, sort of fade out. And you could feel sort of like exhausted, basically fatigued, tired for a little bit afterwards. It says here a few days afterwards you could feel that, which makes sense because it would be bloody exhausting to go through that, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the symptoms of migraine, shall we?
Yes, please.
So the most common symptoms, it says here, is intense headache on one side of the head. It's, we said, moderate to severe throbbing sensation. It gets worse when you move. Not fun.
No.
And can stop you from doing the stuff that you do in your normal day-to-day life, which is kind of where that disabling aspect comes about, right? And as we said, it can sometimes occur on both sides of the head and could affect your face, neck, your sort of shoulders area as well, it says. And yeah, there are some other symptoms alongside that, which we've mentioned, the feeling sick, being sick, sensitivity to light. It says here, from the NHS, which is why many people with a migraine want to rest in a quiet, dark room. And you can also have other symptoms like sweating, poor concentration, feeling either very hot or very cold, abdominal pain, as we've mentioned before, diarrhea. And you don't necessarily experience all those symptoms, but you could also experience those symptoms without then having a headache as well, right? Which is where that one from earlier of sort of just having aura without the headache could sort of come in. And, you know, as we said, it could last between 4 hours and 3 days, and you could feel tired for a week afterwards. And let's just quickly talk about some more of the symptoms of aura. And we've already said, I'm sure you remember, 1 in 3 people with migraines have temporary warning systems known as aura before a migraine. It's coming from the NHS. So a third of people basically will, you know, with migraines will have this sort of this precursor that they're like, oh, she's a coming.
Like a support act.
Yeah, exactly. That would be the visual problems that we've mentioned, the flashing lights, but there's also a numbness and like pins and needles sort of a sensation, which it says here, usually starts in one hand and moves up your arm before affecting your face, lips and tongue. Yeah, feeling dizzy or off balance, difficulty speaking, loss of consciousness, although the NHS says that is unusual. And yeah, as we've said already, between 5 minutes to an hour for that. And, you know, again, what they're always stressing whenever we're going through these is the sort of difference in intensity. Like none of this necessarily means, oh yeah, you're gonna have a very intense headache or a not intense headache. You know, I mean, you know, having aura, as far as I'm aware, having aura doesn't seem to be tied to milder or more severe headaches. But that's kind of all of the symptoms. We kind of understand what migraine is now, or what migraines are now. What do you think is the cause?
We don't know.
Well, Luke, you're gosh darn right. Yeah. No, so we don't know exactly what causes migraines. Chemicals going on. It's chemicals in your brain, nerves and blood vessels in the brain. Brain not doing what it would normally do.
Is there a genetic element to it? Do you inherit migraine susceptibility?
Well, about half of the people who experience migraines also have a close relative who also experience migraines. So there does seem to be a genetic element to it, but we're not I don't know.
Yeah.
We're not terribly sure what that is as of yet.
That could also be anything. It could be like a lifestyle thing.
Yeah, like, it could be. Yeah. And that's what I was about to say, that you can sort of, I guess some people can limit the migraines that they experience by sort of trying to limit certain triggers. And they've got 4 or 5 triggers listed out here. Starting your period, stress, tiredness.
Don't start your period. Just don't.
Well, just don't birth control pills.
Oh, of course.
You can regulate periods with certain sort of birth control pills.
You don't often just keep going with the birth control pill so you never have a period, do you?
I think some people...
Some people can?
I think some people do. I don't know whether they're supposed to, but I think some people do. I think it is recommended that you do take time off to have a period.
But then you can schedule your period and your migraine and take some time off work.
No, exactly, yeah. I mean, if you were to get time off work for something, something like that. You ought to.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they oughtn't.
No.
I'm just saying that they mightn't. Yeah, no, but avoiding certain foods and drinks as well. So stress, tiredness, certain sort of other environmental triggers could, you know, play some kind of effect. But yeah, I mean, look, we think there's this genetic aspect to it. What it says here is that they sort of set the brain to be less able to process sensory inputs and make the brain vulnerable to attacks. But also there's more going on there. So it's not just genetics. There's also an epigenetic element to it as well. Do you know what epigenetics are?
It's the layer which determines which genes are turned on.
Yeah, so the sort of the way that sort of the environment will affect the expression, I guess, of your genes. It's how genes interact with the environment, essentially, right? Mm. So that also plays a role. So, I mean, it says here, the more the brain is challenged by these stimuli, the more pain neurochemicals are produced. Migraine threshold theory suggests that combinations of changes in irritate the brain and trigger attacks once pain neurochemicals reach a certain level. So what that's saying there essentially is that you know there are certain stimuli that come in, right? Certain things that you experience and your brain it seems what it's saying is sort of that the brain is almost overwhelmed in the sense that it triggers these sort of pain, these pain chemicals, and we don't know the exact cause. Again, we don't know the exact cause, but we think that's kind of what's going on there. So there could be a genetic element, sort of environmental factors then affecting that too. It's biology. It's going to be complex, right? And it says here that change is pretty important. So if you get migraines, if you have migraines, it says here the migraine body, that it's more sensitive to internal bodily changes. So chemical changes in your body, things like that. I mean, if you think about it, right? If starting your period, stress, tiredness, and certain foods and drinks can trigger migraines, it would make sense that internal bodily changes could trigger attacks because certain foods and drinks are going to change the chemical, the chemistry of your body somewhat, right?
Fizzy drinks.
Well, yeah. Sure. Yeah. I mean, in what sense, Luke?
Well, the kind of artificial sweeteners, I guess. And they boost. They would probably boost insulin production as well.
Exactly. Yeah. No. I mean, you put something into your body, it's probably going to cause some kind of chemical change in there. Starting your period means you know there's going to be hormonal changes. Stress releases hormones that are sort of related to stress. Tiredness. You release hormones and neurochemicals that are related to tiredness. Certain foods or drinks can cause different changes in your body. You know, if you've got caffeine in there, that's going to affect you. If you've got sugar, that can have a different effect. All of these chemicals will affect the sort of, I guess, to an extent, the biochemistry of your body. And what it's saying here is that if you get migraines, it might be that your sort of brain brain is a little bit maybe more sensitive to changes in that biochemistry, right? So, I mean, it literally says here it's more sensitive to internal body changes such as blood sugar levels, sleep routines, hormones, and stress, and external environmental factors like light glare, strong visual patterns like stripes, stuffy air quality, and even weather.
So, there is some truth in the statement, you're giving me a migraine.
Yeah.
Because if you're having a conversation, it's stressing you the heck out. Or some other emotion.
Yeah.
That could, by the sounds of it, trigger a migraine. Now, most of the people who are saying that, probably it's not.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is genuinely possible.
You know, it's not completely made up. It's just being exaggerated. Yeah.
Are you seeing stripy patterns?
Oh, I'm seeing them all. I actually am seeing stripy patterns right behind you.
Oh, there are stripy patterns right behind me.
All those stripy patterns are zigzags and shadows that are making stripes.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can see this. It's the sound panels that are behind us.
Unless you can't, because you're listening to the podcast.
In which case, go and watch it. Unless, obviously, you can't see. In which case, imagine it, I guess.
Don't do that. It will trigger a migraine.
So obviously some of these factors are more likely to, you know, have an effect. Some are less likely. Apparently, sort of changes in blood sugar levels are a major one. So, I mean, that's something that can be affected by, you know, just eating differently. If you miss a meal, that can affect you. If you have more sugar in, if you have a really sugary food, that can cause your blood sugar levels to spike. And obviously some people are more, I guess, susceptible or sensitive to different changes in their body than others. You know, for example, some people can't go without, you know, can't miss a meal without feeling like really, really rough throughout the day. Other people can very easily forget to eat and not know it until maybe like 4 a.m. when their tummy is saying, hey, I'm in pain because you didn't eat for me today.
Anyone in particular?
I don't know.
Got awfully personal, awfully quick.
No, but I do find it interesting. Like, I kind of want to touch on that, is that I've been talking to some people recently and my body, boy, he can take a beating, right? Like, I can put this little guy through a lot of stuff and it is so resilient. Like, yeah. I don't get hungover. I was genuinely maybe going to do an episode on hangovers at some point just so I had a reason to research why I don't get hungover. Because the more I think about it, the weirder it is. Like, I can drink a lot and feel perfectly fine the next day. I mean, you've seen me have one hangover. Remember?
No, I don't. When was the hangover?
The hangover was when we had to move around to Side Guys Day because we all went for it. We went on a night out and I drank, you know, expecting myself to not have a hangover as normal. But for some reason...
You got one. Oh, yeah. And you were furious.
I was.
You were furious because you don't get hangovers.
No, I was. I made a responsible choice.
Yeah.
And it was then made irresponsible by a freak change in my body for some reason.
But you know? You don't get hangovers again now.
Wow. For my entire life, I've never really had hangovers. But there's that. I mean, I can also deal with sleep deprivation fairly well. Mm. I mean, like, sometimes I in high school, I would run on a couple hours sleep a lot of days, you know? Not saying that any of this is good for your body. I'm not saying you should do this. This is not me bragging at all. Like, it's very much a bad, unhealthy, and silly thing to do. I may well have taken many years off my life, but it's very strange how, you know... I don't really experience like any negative side effects. Well, too many negative side effects from these kind of stressors. Well, yeah, but it's in a lot of cases, it's not that it's intentional. Like, I just forget to do things.
Or you're on ADHD meds and you don't eat.
Yeah, or I'm just, exactly. Like I'm busy with other stuff or I just forget. Or, you know, I'm put in a position where I'm like, oh, I've got a lot of work to do.
Mm.
And then that comes first and all the other stuff kind of falls by the wayside. It's not that I'm trying to do it. It's just that I can. And it's really weird that, like, you know, we're all humans. We all have the same basic sort of processes. And yet some people can get a migraine from, you know, like a debilitating headache with all of these other symptoms attached from skipping a meal. And I could maybe not eat for a day and a half and probably not notice it until someone tells me.
You're very lucky you don't get migraines.
I'm so lucky.
You'd just be migraine central if you did.
I would all of the time. But yeah, so hormones as well. I mean, if you think about this, if hormonal changes can affect migraines, what sort of section of the population, not split down sex lines, I mean, what section of the population do you think might have issues with this?
Trans people?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, yes, but also teenagers.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Puberty, right? So it says here that many teenagers have worsening attacks during the turbulent hormonal times of puberty, with growth spurts and menstrual cycles contributing. And also, again, can you maybe hypothesize as to why there is a difference in the number of sort of men that we see with migraines in comparison to the number of women that we see with migraines?
Yeah, well, I was going to say either the two that jumped to mind would be obviously your menstrual cycle triggering migraines because you have a more cyclical hormone cycle. Mm-hmm. I think AFAB people have more of a cyclical. Well, I think AMAB people have like a 24-hour hormone cycle.
I've tried to look into this. Yeah. It's really tough. There's very little. There's very little information out there on, you know, sort of cis men's hormonal cycle. Whereas cis women's hormonal cycle, like it's the menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
We all know what that is. It's like a monthly thing. And so day to day, you kind of maybe see. And when I say day to day, I mean different days. You may see more fluctuations. Whereas with cis men. If it is that 24-hour cycle, which I'm not really, I'm not 100% sure on.
Yeah.
But if it is a shorter cycle, then, you know, there's less of a change between different days.
And we don't know about cis men's hormone cycle because that's just the baseline for every drug ever tested.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, of course. Also, we're not, like, you know, doing periods or whatever. It's an easy way to track it.
Yeah.
So, like, why would we even bother?
But I was also going to say possibly, like, menopause would bring on a lot of migraines, potentially. Although it is, like, younger people, you said it's, like, earlier in life you get migraines.
Earlier in life, it starts.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And it says, it literally says here, any kind of change could worsen attacks. And it gives some examples, a new job, moving house, traveling abroad, but even stress reduction, apparently, as well. So not just, you know, not an increase of stress, but like, decrease in stress. Because if you think about it, if you're used to running high stress and then suddenly your body, boom, drops all that stress, you're relaxed. It's the change that's the issue. It's not necessarily the, you know, the absolute value of whatever sort of stress or sort of neurochemicals and hormones are in your body. It's just the change between the two. So it says here, letdown or weekend migraine attacks are commonly described frustrating for people relaxing after a stressful time. Like you can understand why this is debilitating. I'm really glad this was voted in by our patrons because this is something I didn't know about and wouldn't have known about.
I tell you, the closest thing I ever got to what I think a migraine would feel like was actually when I gave up caffeine. I quit caffeine. I now drink caffeine again, but I tried to quit caffeine. And I had about 3 days where I couldn't focus. I was sore every time I moved. I had a headache. Like almost constantly, I felt sick. I felt like all these horrible things.
Just withdrawal symptoms, right?
Just withdrawal symptoms from caffeine. And that was a, like you say, a massive change in my body's composition because I was having loads of caffeine all day, every day. And suddenly, 3 days without it. And oh my gosh, it was dreadful.
Well, yeah, there's a chemical that your body's used to running with. Yeah. And then suddenly you say, oh, hang on, no more of that. None. You're done now. Which is, it's mad. I mean, those withdrawal symptoms are crazy, right? Because I mean, I had to stop caffeine because it made me too anxious, honestly. Like, the amount that I was drinking, it would just, sometimes I would just be, oh, my body is incredibly anxious, but my brain isn't. Why? What's going on?
Yes, I've had that before. I observe your body from, like, a top-down position being like, what's going on down there?
Yeah, it's like,
you okay?
It's like, hey, buddy, it seems that you think that we're anxious, but there's no worries in my head, so I just want to figure out, like, what do you think is going on here, right? And then I realized, oh, I had a couple of Pepsi Maxes, and the caffeine and those probably just went ahead and triggered that, right? But yeah, no, coming off of caffeine it's not fun. It's not nice. I mean, you think about it. People are addicted to a drug. So many people are addicted to this drug, but it's very, very normalized. Mm-hmm. And whereas alcoholics, you know, if we talk about alcohol withdrawal symptoms, and obviously I understand the differences between, you know, ingesting a lot of caffeine and ingesting a lot of alcohol, you're far more likely to mistreat and abuse others and harm yourself and others with alcohol abuse, you know, in comparison to caffeine abuse. But still, it is interesting that, you know, there is such a normalized drug in our in our culture that people are just so used to running on.
To the point where they wouldn't consider it a drug.
No, absolutely.
People are like, caffeine is a stimulant drug.
Rather than a depressant.
We've done a whole thing about caffeine. We know about caffeine before, the caffeine fans. We understand how it works. But yeah, it's essentially, we use it as a stimulant drug, right? We use it in the opposite way that we use alcohol. We use alcohol to chill out. We use caffeine to get up. And yeah, that's just a normal part of your day. There are multinational billion-dollar corporations that sell it to everybody with no control whatsoever. And yet, you tell someone that they might have a puff of marijuana for a medical condition because they have, like, for example, multiple sclerosis, and then suddenly it's like, no, you go to jail for that.
Yeah, especially in jail. The UK. Especially in the UK. And do you know what's interesting to me about the whole caffeine thing is that I'm going to use the C word. Look, I'm very sorry. We're getting into it. But
caffeine.
Yeah. No, but caffeine, I don't think, would be nearly as popular a drug if it weren't for capitalism forcing people into thinking that productivity is the sole determining factor of their worth, right? Because if you think about it, right, like, okay, I only ever need to ingest caffeine, generally, when I'm on some kind of crunch, right? When I have left things too late, and it's very late at night, I'm like, I need to stay awake. But other than that, I could just kind of sleep when I'm tired and wake up when I'm not, and get stuff done around that. This all sort of needing caffeine to get up and get going and do things in your day is so dangerous, man. Like, I've done this thing where I remove basically all caffeine from my life, and maybe I'll have a coffee like four times a year. If I want to have a coffee, usually I have decaf. Maybe I'll have a coffee 3-4 times a year, or an energy drink a couple times a year, only when I need like a burst of energy, and I use it like that. But people are using it like every day as it helps me get up out of bed. Well, yeah, it does now, because you can't get out of bed without it because your body's used to that, and you now need it for that. Like, there's diminishing returns, is my point. You know, it's absolutely mad that addiction is just so, so normalized. Like, a girl in my school, when I was in high school, had to stop drinking coffee because she had literally damaged her body from the amount of caffeine she was drinking. Whoa. No, I know. Insane. And they just sell it to literally anyone who will buy it. Okay. But okay, so that is a lot of the migraine stuff. It's basically everything to do with migraines, except for one sort of part, is the sort of prevention of migraines. So essentially, all you can really do here is just sort of try to avoid the triggers that you spot. If you spot there's some triggers, try to avoid that. I mean, as far as I'm aware, there aren't really many treatments for migraines other than that sort of like maybe counseling to help you sort of deal with the mental aspect of it, and just generally trying to live a healthy lifestyle, have a balanced diet, not put your body through too much sort of stress. And when I say stress, I mean like psychological stress, maybe physical stress, you know, stress from sleep deprivation, all of these sorts of things. Try to be somewhat consistent and not have drastic changes in your body's biochemistry. And avoid triggers, the sort of triggers that we've spoken about, you know, like periods. Just avoid them altogether. that's kind of what the advice is.
But we don't have any kind of treatment for, like, a migraine's coming or it's onset. Have we got a drug for that?
We do, but it says here, if your migraines are severe or if you tried avoiding possible triggers and are still experiencing symptoms, a GP may prescribe medicines to help prevent further attacks. So there's anti-seizure medication. It's topiramate. And there's another one called, you might have heard of this, propranolol, which is usually, it's used to treat high blood pressure. And it could, that could, those could take a few weeks to start to improve the symptoms. But yeah, there's not a lot out there to deal with migraines. It seems to be mostly something that you kind of have to get along with. I mean, there is medication for it, but it's one of those things where they kind of tell you, okay, change your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't work, then here are drugs. Or at least that's what the NHS is saying, right? So yeah, that is migraine. That is sort of the entire episode for us. We've gone through what they are, the difference between migraines and headaches, causes, symptoms, everything. And you know what? I'm glad we did this, because I didn't know anything about this topic until I sat down to look at this episode.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. So thank you, patrons. But there's just one thing left to do.
Uh-oh.
It's a quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Migraine edition.
So the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's just one question for you, Luke. If you get the answer correct before someone in the audience answers it before you, then you win. What do you win, Luke?
I win some of that tasty migraine medication, and I'll give it to a person in need.
What a kind, generous fellow. Well, here comes the question for you, Luke. The question for you today is, what percentage of people with migraines have the temporary warning systems, also known as auras, before a migraine?
30%.
30%? Well, it's one in three people. It's 33.333 repeating, Luke, but you know what? I'll give it to you. Well done. Did you beat Luke this week? Get down to the comments and let us know. But I think that's pretty much everything from us, is it not?
I think that's everything from us, other than if you have a migraine, let me know and I'll send you that sexy medication, because I just won it from Corey.
Sure. Okay.
Now,
well,
Corey
you.
Has to source a controlled substance. Please. Thank you, Corey.
Okay. Well, look, I want to thank all of our patrons for voting in this episode. You guys are wonderful. You let us make this brilliant show that we all enjoy so much.
Speaking of thanking patrons, let's thank some patrons.
Yes, let's thank some patrons. Every single time we do a Patreon vote episode, we like to thank the new patrons of the month. So go ahead and sign up if you want us to thank you by name at the end of an episode. So first off, thank you to Koi Busey.
Thank you, Abby Dwyer.
Thank you, Threelema.
Thank you, Moki.
Thank you, Jennifer Johansson.
We don't be Johansson.
Thank you, Jennifer Johansson. Thank you, Jennifer Johansson. Thank you, Jennifer Johansson. Thank you, Jennifer Johansson.
And thank you, Mikael van der Moelen.
Wow, lots of very sort of Dutchy European-y names today.
We finally broke through to the Dutch. They all left after Brexit, but we're back.
But time for us to go. So thank you to all of our patrons, with an extra special thank you to executive producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for watching. You can find the full reference of this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Cupboard everywhere.
Well, goodbye.
Ooh, goodbye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling Yuzu Mango IQ Mix Hydration Mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition. Great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.